In this episode of Movie Wallahs, we review A Million Ways to Die in the West and The Fault in Our Stars. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And he asked you as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
Second podcast recording session in a row. We have LA Film Festival coming up, which I don't think we've spoken about on the show.
No, we're really excited.
So hopefully I'll get this podcast out before the film festival. But for those of you in Southern California,
go.
You get the chance to
My
go.
Goodness.
This is a real treat of a film festival. It's not the biggest and it may not have all of the biggest openings. A lot of stuff that breaks here has been broken at other film festivals. But that just makes it a great excuse to see films that you won't get the chance to see anywhere else. And it's convenient and it's comfortable and they do a really good job curating the movies. So go to this damn film festival, people.
You know, and we've said this before, but really everything which is an annoyance and a pain and everything you have to kind of put up with in other film festivals, it's not there at the LA Film Festival. So you don't have to put up with standing in lines forever. You don't have to put up with, you know, booking tickets, you know, trying to find tickets, you know, when they're not available. It's convenient. Parking is only $10. It's in heart of downtown. It's no fuss. Often the filmmakers are there. There's a great taco truck right across from the venue.
We have to figure out the name of that truck and follow them on Twitter or something. No, you
I've got it in my notes. I'll have to look it up because that's worth going alone.
Yeah, just for the tacos. But other than that, seriously, I mean, you know, people go out normally and watch a movie over the weekend. Please, you owe it to yourself, if you're in the LA area, go watch a movie at the film festival. You're not going to pay a dollar extra, and you'll have a great experience.
And you might get to see cast and crew.
Correct.
Yeah. Like I say, I mean, for me, the most wonderful aspect of this film festival is just how good a job the 2 years that we've gone, they've done about picking the films. I mean, we haven't really seen any turkeys.
No, if rarely.
And that's always a risk when you do go to a film festival, I think. You know, you see smaller films that maybe didn't quite live up to the promise that they had, but you know, these guys know what they're doing.
I just like how unfussy it is. You know, maybe it's because it's set, because it's in LA where maybe they have, you know, an abundance of film festivals, but it's just so matter of fact. It's in and out. You know, no pretense. You know, it equalizes everybody. You watch a movie. I like the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
You know? And great screens in that
room. So go to LAFF, Los Angeles Film Festival, LAFF. Follow us on Twitter because we'll try and tweet from there with the hashtag LAFF, LAFF. But seriously, go.
And it's the 20th anniversary this year of the film festival.
They have a great app to help you negotiate. I mean, just everything. It's really nicely done.
And
go.
Every kind of film. So, you know, if you like blockbusters, they have those, you know, which are going to be opening soon. They have little independent films. They have foreign films. They have documentaries. They have short films. And this year, they, for some reason, God help us, they have like a whole video section on Beyonce videos. I don't know. But
yeah, that's a little strange.
But there's really a really good selection of stuff, as always.
Go to this, and if no other reason, you can hang out with us.
Yes.
All right.
We'll treat you to a taco.
Oh, gosh.
You know what? Come find us. Tacos on us.
Only one, though.
All right. Let's move into our movie reviews. We have A Million Ways to Die in the West and The Fault in Our Stars. Which one do you want to do first?
Yes, you can choose.
A Million Ways to Die in the West. In the West.
All right.
Seth MacFarlane directs, produces, co-writes, and plays the role of the cowardly sheep farmer Albert in this movie. After Albert backs out of a gunfight, his fickle girlfriend leaves him for another man. When a mysterious and beautiful woman rides into town, she helps him find his courage and they begin to fall in love. But when her husband, a notorious outlaw, arrives seeking revenge, the farmer must put his newfound courage to the test. So this stars alongside MacFarlane, Charlize Theron, Liam Neeson, Amanda Seyfried, Giovanni Ribisi, Sarah Silverman, and Neil Patrick Harris, amongst others. And also, a little tidbit fact, McFarlane actually has reunited many of the filmmakers behind the film Ted. So it's a lot of the same team. So who wants to go first on this one? Finger says Yazdi.
So it's a good thing you mentioned Ted, because, you know, I, for the life of me, do not understand the humor of Seth MacFarlane. Ted was completely lost on me. I maybe laughed three times. I mean, I didn't have a bad time, but I was like, why is this considered exceptionally funny? I watched The Family Guy with a chuckle. I'm not a big fan. And, you know, I really hated the time MacFarlane hosted the Oscars. So I do not get his humor. Considering all of that, I found myself really, really surprised to find myself laughing and laughing a lot during A Million Ways to Die in the West. So, you know, I know this movie is not getting a good reception critically, you know, but I don't know what's wrong with me. But I had a great time with this. I was laughing my butt off, and I actually, now I finally get, I'm getting his humor. Maybe I'm coming late to the party, but I'm getting it with this movie.
Joe.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of his. We finally saw Ted a couple months ago. And I admit, I enjoyed Ted. And I, unlike you yesterday, I loved Seth MacFarlane's Oscars. I think he did a really nice job of hosting the show that year. But this movie is, I have some issues with it. And we'll talk about those. But overall, like you, I found myself not just laughing, but belly laughing in a couple of places. And it's, for me, it's the Jackass brand of humor. It's real stupidity. But it worked. It worked. And it worked in a kind of a cringy way. I was like, oh, really? You're going to do that joke? Okay, God, that gag. But it worked. It tickled me. So I had fun.
So I think, you know, you've both said it. I'm going to say it a third way. I think you either prescribe to this particular strain of humor or it's really going to annoy you and you won't be able to make it through the movie. And it looks like a lot of people are in that latter camp because the Rotten Tomatoes rating is only 33% currently. Hopefully that will go up. For me, this is another one to add to my favorite movies of the year so far. I love this movie. I mean, it's highly disposable and it's full of empty calories, but it's so much fun and it's entertaining and it had me belly laughing for most of it. And the other thing is, it's a gag a minute, but I think 75% of the gags, if not more, worked for me. I really like this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you're going to do like a spoof or a farce, which is set in the West, and it's very obvious that MacFarlane and the writers have a real fondness for that genre. And if you're going to do a spoof, you got to be really out there. You have to be not just stupid, but you have to be deranged stupid. And this movie, thank God, has the good sense to say, this is not of bad enough taste. We need to push the bad taste even further. The taste needs to be even further baddened. And I think it does the movie well because it's so deranged. I mean, there's like a 10-minute sequence like in the last third of the movie, which is just completely gonzo. It's like wacko. It's like, oh my God, they're like sheep which are dancing. And my jaw was on the floor. I was like, wow. I mean, this is my thing, you know. You don't play it in the middle. You have to get anarchic with it. And I'm glad that the comedy is so anarchic. I mean, it really turned me off many, many places, but I was happy to be turned off.
You say that it gets out there. I mean, for me, more than anything, that's one of the issues I have with the movie, is that some of the humor was just presented by silly shocks, right?
Yeah.
They literally, you know, it's like being slapped around the face with a wet fish. You know, everyone else laughs, but I'm sitting there going, no! And you were sat next to me. There were at least a couple of moments where I was like sinking into my seat. It's like, I couldn't look at the screen in a couple of moments because it's like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't go. Oh, God, they went there.
Right.
And not only did they go there, they went like 5 miles past there.
Yeah.
So that's, I kind of take issue with that input at points in time. I can see how that offends people. I just didn't want to look at some of the stuff. But, yeah, that's really where I kind of struggled with the movie.
So the thing that fascinates me is that he gets really, you know, A-class actors to join in the fun. And they play it really well. They do a really good acting job. But To go back to the humor, I mean, I think the humor is as gross as you get in a Judd Apatow movie. But for some reason, because I always take offense to Judd Apatow movies, the grossness, for some reason, I didn't find the humor offensive because somehow it seems more smart. And I think the thing that really worked for me in this movie was I like that Seth MacFarlane is clearly not a man of the time in the movie. but no one else knows that except us, it feels like.
Yeah, he
like
seems anachronistic.
It's like a joke that we're kind of in on as the audience. And I think that the whole movie is just a great big lark, and the actors are having way more fun than they think most audiences are going to have. But it worked for me. I think it's predictable, but it's more like a pantomime, and all that's missing is the, oh, no, he didn't, or behind you. But it's just such a brilliant comedy caper.
It's a lark.
It's a lark.
Nothing more than a lark.
But look how much fun these actors are having. I mean, you know, Neil Patrick Harris. I mean, thank God Neil Patrick Harris is not playing Neil Patrick Harris. He's really playing this character, like, to the hilt. And he, poor guy, I mean, I think he has to do, like, horrible things in this movie. I'm like, oh my God, poor Neil Patrick Harris. But Neil Patrick Harris is a trooper, and he's like, okay, I'm going to do it for this movie. And, you know, Amanda Seyfried, I mean, you know, my favorite line in the movie is, you know, Charlize Theron comes up to Amanda Seyfried and says, for a woman with eyes this big, you sure are blind, or something like that.
It's brilliant.
And it's brilliant. And I'm glad that Amanda Seyfried can laugh at herself for having these big eyes, and she didn't, like, you know, throw a hissy fit, you know, about having this line in the movie. And about Charlize Theron, you know, I think, you know, cinema needs some actors, and I think cinema needs Charlize Theron. And I've missed her for too long, and it's so good to be able to see that she can't just do the Oscar-winning monster kind of roles, but she can really play funny.
Yes.
You know, and
that was a
revelation for me. And I was just so, every time she was on the screen, I was happy. She belongs there. Filmmakers, come on, don't waste Charlize Theron. Find things for her to do.
Yeah, she made good use of her, you know, her, I guess, South African sensibility here, right? I mean, I think there's a kind of a sensibility that Hollywood actresses don't have that she was able to bring to the role. It's almost British in its humor.
The
ability to kind of laugh at herself for who she is.
Yeah, and she almost reminded me of Doris Day in those old Western movies. There was just this lovely likability to her.
A lightness.
Yeah, and this lovely humor and...
See, I got more of the Calamity Jane kind of tomboy.
That's what I'm saying. That was Doris Day, right?
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah.
But there's like, you know, I'm going to take charge of it. Nothing is going to ever get too bad.
Yeah.
And life is sunny. And, you know, this is all just, you know, we're going through the motions, but everything will be fine at the end.
I just loved the movie. It was such a great movie.
They had fun with the cinematography, too. I mean, when you look at the opening
credits.
You know, brilliant,
There was... You know, a real love for the old West in there. And like you said, Yazdi, that love for this genre came through. Yeah, you know, I think it felt big and it felt exciting, actually,
epic
at the beginning. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it kind of reminded me, the opening credits reminded me of McKenna's Gold or For a Few Dollars More, or, you know, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And
it was a sleight of hand because the rest of the movie was so inexpensively done. I mean, even to the point where I think, you know, their cinematography was done on kind of cheaper digital cameras because it had this horrible...
In a studio with a backdrop.
Right, yeah. It had this horrible television-type look to it that I found very distracting. But that opening sequence really, you know, set me up for something, you know... big and epic, and I enjoyed that.
And when you compare something like this movie to even like Lone Ranger from last year, I mean, this is so much more superior, even though it's a spoof. I mean, it's just so much more superior.
I wonder if it was a reaction to Lone Ranger, maybe.
I mean, there are people who think The Lone Ranger is the best movie of the last decade, just so you know.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I am not one of them.
Yeah.
Me neither. I don't think any of them are sitting around this table.
Yeah, but I think both of those movies have very different intentions. But
of course, yeah.
But I just, I mean, I frankly don't understand all the bad press. I don't understand people who are saying this is boring and people who are saying that the jokes don't work. And maybe it's all about wiring. Maybe something works for you personally and others don't.
I would maybe put it this way. There are some comedies that you would recommend your mum watch, and there are some comedies that you would say, mum, just... Because if my mum saw this, it would be... She would turn it off the television in seconds. She'd be like, this is just stupidity.
But you would... Sorry.
No, but the point I'm making is that I think a lot of people have walked in there and they're like, this is not even kind of slapstick. This is just stupidity, because there are some really dumb visual gags.
Sure.
Really dumb.
Inappropriate.
Not just inappropriate, but they're just dumb. They're just really dumb gags, right? But they're funny because they're delivered with a certain sense of conviction and they choose to go there. And if you tune into that tone, but if you're not on that wavelength, this stuff is just... It's ridiculous. It's like, random stuff that's supposed to be funny.
But it's the same way that you wouldn't recommend your mom watching Hangover.
No, I think she would actually be okay with something like that.
Really?
More so than this.
Hmm.
Because Hangover, at least there's some... It's a cleverly designed movie, right? And there's that whole kind of, you know, what happened here. Yeah. Whereas this movie just hits you with dumb stuff. Time of... Now, you know, Hangover, I think, done linearly, would have been something like this, you know. But it wasn't. It was a construction of that movie that was clever. But anyway.
I mean, even a one-joke premise around the whole, you know, Sarah Silverman and Giovanni Ribisi
yeah.
character. It's a one-joke premise, but boy, do they milk it.
Funny.
They milk it, like, through scene after scene after scene. It's just, you know.
No pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. But
and did anyone find the sweetness in the romance here?
I liked it.
Yeah, of course. I totally bought it.
I really liked it. I did.
I mean, I think Seth MacFarlane really, you know, he did a lovely job of being... It's hard to call a movie like this a romance, but I was like totally going for them. I was like really rooting for them.
Yeah, I wanted him to get the girl. And even the Giovanni Ribisi character with Sarah Silverman. I bought that romance too. It was very sweet. There was some real sweetness underneath all the crazy jokes and the sheep on the roof, which really made me laugh.
But going back to the romance bit, it's hard to do that stuff where it's like, you know, he's after his wife, but really it takes him a while to realize that the person who's right for him is not this person. It's so cheesy. Even as I'm saying it, it sounds horribly cliched, but to make it even work halfway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, it's Charlize Theron. I really think it's Charlize Theron. But
who didn't love the moustache song?
I know.
I love that sequence. The moustache song is so funny.
Oh, my word.
Okay, let's wrap this one up. So, Yazdi, you go first.
I mean, I'm at the risk of repeating myself, you know, who are these people who are not liking this movie? Shame on you.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I just had, you know, a lark. I had a great time. I finally understand Seth MacFarlane and his brand of humor. 7.5 out of 10.
And
I'm going to bump it up to an 8 out of 10 because
wow.
I'm smiling. I'm laughing.
You're
even
smiling.
As,
yeah.
I'm smiling and laughing even as I'm reminiscing about this movie. And it's so weird. It's happening a lot this past couple months where I'm really liking movies that everybody else hates. And I'm starting to question the tomato meter. But anyway.
Joe.
You know, normally I'd say for stuff like this, it's not big and it's not clever. But actually, some of it, I've just said it's full of dumb gags, and now I'm going to say it's reasonably clever. You know, in the moment, I enjoyed the heck out of this movie. I mean, I really did. I think you guys were next to me, and you know, we were all laughing. I think the audience responded to it too. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, you know, 70% of the audience was there. I think everyone kind of thought this was funny in the moment, and for that, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
This is a comic caper that I found very, very entertaining, and I can certainly think of a million worse ways to spend your time than watching this movie. I gotta say it, Joe, I think I'm gonna have to buy this one, or you're gonna have to buy this one for me. This is brilliance. 9 out of 10.
No, not 9.
Seriously. Just for the moustache song, it gets 2 points. That moustache sequence is so funny.
You're going to give 9 to a movie which has a joke about a goat's penis?
Yes.
Or yes. Was it a sheep's penis? I don't even remember.
Oh, dear, I just had another visual.
Let's move on.
The sheep on the roof had me in stitches. Stitches. Like, really, that sheep on the roof? I thought I was going to pee my pants at that point because I'd laughed so much up until that point. Oh, my God. Love.
Yes.
Next, we are going to talk about the movie.
In completely another direction.
Yes, this is like polar opposite.
It couldn't be more different, actually. I think maybe we should have done them in a different order. But Fault in Our Stars, and I think I'm introing this one. So this movie is directed by Joss Boone. This movie is directed by Joss Boone. I think he had a movie last year called Stuck in Love, not one that I caught. But it did reasonably well, hence his shot at getting another movie to direct. And it just missed fresh on the Rotten Tomatoes. So has anyone seen Stuck in Love? No, we must have missed that one. And it came out last year. It stars Shailene Woodley, William Dafoe, Ansel Elgort, who I think...
As in Divergent.
Thank you. Yes. Gosh, he was. They both were in Divergence. Yep. I didn't realize that. And the basic premise of the movie is there are two teenagers who have both had their lives affected one way or the other by cancer. In fact, the character Hazel, which is Shailene Woodley's character, is essentially losing her battle against cancer. And I think the movie is centered around that basic journey. They meet and basically they form a relationship, and the movie basically goes down that road. It's based on a book, and apparently a very well-loved book an author by the name of John Green. I'm not familiar with that book, and I wasn't familiar with that book before going in, but clearly it's been given a lot of respect here.
Yeah, I've read at least one of his other books, and he's a very, very good writer, so I can't wait to read the book. Actually, I was at the bookstore last evening, and I cheated, and I read the last few pages of The Fault in Their Stars, because I wanted to see how the movie matched up to the book. So anyway,
sneaky, I like it.
So Rashmi and I just caught this one today, so it's very fresh in our minds. Yasti, I think you caught the screening last week. Mm-hmm. Who wants to give us their 2 cents first? Rashmi, why don't you take it away?
So I was going to try and predict whether you guys would like it or not. I'm going to predict both of you liked it. Okay, so having said that, and I'll wait for your responses, this film makes me want to scream because I felt so completely manipulated all of the way through. And had Shailene Woodley not been in this movie, this would so have been relegated to the Hallmark Channel. I found this predictable, precious, and so packed, and I'm really annoyed that it had me on the edge of tears for much of it. I ended up wiping my tears way more than I should have been rolling them.
Yasti.
So, When I watched it in the screening, at about the halfway point, you could start hearing little muffles, you know, people like little... And then, I kid you not, in the last 20 minutes, it was like the full waterworks. People were like honking their noses and like... Ah! I mean, people were wailing. I have not seen a movie where people have so like abandoned... You know, they just started sobbing their heart out. And I have to say, during the last 20 minutes of the movie... there were tears running down my cheeks, no question about it. So this movie is very, very effective in terms of, you know, I think when a movie so deliberately is manufactured in order to evoke this particular reaction, then you got to question its intentions like you do, Rashmi. But in the moment, I believed in it. And like you, I have a problem with how the movie... seems synthetic. It seems kind of its intentions are a little sullied by its reason for being is to make you cry. But I'm going to put that aside. And even if you take the first half of the movie, I actually bought the central relationship between those two people. I bought the little, you know, particularities about their relationship. I liked, you know, how specific those characters were. And I think, at least based on what I saw yesterday at the bookstore, the movie used very, very closely to the book. And I think the book is exceptionally well written. So I'm very tempted to kind of brush this movie aside as just, you know, this generation's love story. You know, there was a movie called Love Story made in the 70s, very similar about, you know, young people, one of whom is dying. Only in this case, you know, both of them have cancer. So I'm tempted to push it aside as just this generation's love story. But I actually think there's more meat to this.
Just as I thought. Joe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my initial comment is that this was such a sweet movie that your ticket should be accompanied by one or two units of insulin. Because, I mean, it does have that, you know, almost diabetic level of sweetness to it. But there's a warm emotionality and a reality to it that kept it grounded for me. And more importantly, that grounding kept my eyes from rolling, because like you, Rashmi, I had a couple of problems with the way that the story was contrived. I mean, it was definitely a contrivance, but by the time we hit act three, I was like, to hell with this. This has got me, right. And it's got me in a really big way. So I was just like, I'm going to let it hit me. And I was actually crying in act three. I mean, there were tears in my eyes. That happens so seldom.
I was going to say, if you hadn't, Joe, I mean, I would think you're made of stone, because anyone who goes to this movie and doesn't shed at least one tear seriously must have a heart made of stone.
I was really struggling. I mean, it was
so I think you've got to give the movie credit for having this near universally making almost every kind of person, bringing them to that space where they're very, very emotional and very ready to cry.
No, I shan't. I will argue with both of you. So this is the problem, okay? Uh-oh. This could have been an Oscar-type performance by Woodley, but the story's just too teenage and too Mills and Boons. It was too melodramatic, and even though I didn't love 50-50 from 2 years ago, which was the movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen, I think it handled the topic of cancer in a less typically heartbreaking way. And I think the other problem I had with the movie was the dialogue was just too hammy, and I can't imagine a young teenager of today talking about music by Peter Gabriel and wearing a Pink Floyd t-shirt. So inherently, I had a problem with the character a little bit. Now, that's a minor detail, but for me, it set the character up in a wrong way.
You stole the words from my notes. 50-50 when it came out in 2012 was my number one movie of the year. I really love that movie.
Right.
And my recommendation to anybody is, instead of watching A Fault in Their Stars, they should go and rent 50-50 to see how you do this kind of stuff without seeming so manipulative. I mean, this is the dilemma with the movie. It's so overtly manipulative, but it's also so goddamn effective. So it's yes. very hard to reconcile both of those yes. parts. It wants you to cry, but damn if it doesn't make you cry.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, there are a lot of contrivances here. You know, there is the kind of the make-a-wish journey that they go on, mm-hmm. Which results in a really unexpected outcome that, in my mind, you know, it was the movie's attempt at trying to manipulate the dramatic arc, right? It was the kind of the series of things that go wrong so that we get to that point where we are really vulnerable to being hit with wave after wave of very emotional occurrences. So in my mind, that was part of the manipulation that was going on here, because what happened in that sequence to me didn't necessarily reflect reality. I mean, that character was such a contrivance, mm-hmm. the William Dafoe character. He was a plot device. He was there to hit blow after blow after blow to people who are already, for me at least, that's what I took from that. So I think that manipulation is evident. But like you yesterday, I mean, who cares when it works, yeah. right? I mean, the movie is effective. It's annoying, but it's effective.
But I think the difference is whether you like yourself when you wake up the next morning. So, you know, I mean, compare this to something like 12 Years a Slave, or compare this to something like even Short Term 12, where I was completely devastated and I was sobbing, but it felt organic and it felt well earned, and it didn't feel like somebody had manipulated me. Whereas this, I do feel like, you know, and my point is, I'm not giving anything away, but you know, there's a death in the movie, and there is a funeral, and then there is a eulogy before the funeral, and there is a practice of the eulogy, and all of it is completely manufactured to make you cry at every step of the way. I mean, do you need to wallow so much? Do we need scene after scene after scene of lingering on this death? And it works every single time. I was crying through each one of those scenes, but I was like, oh God, please make this stop. You know, it's like, I don't want to cry so much.
Right, it's like pepper spray.
And, you know, I actually... But
yes, that will make you cry. But I didn't feel like this was like being pepper sprayed.
And going back to the Willem Dafoe character, actually I was fascinated by that character. It doesn't really work, but I saw the movie as an interesting theoretical construct, where it was almost that character was a representation of the emotionality, the realness versus the theoretical intellect. And he kind of represented theoretical intellect, somebody who's just looking at things from a theoretical perspective versus them who are completely emotionally invested through what they're going through. And I think that was the intent, to kind of show that contrast, but he just came off seeming like a jerk, and maybe that's the intent all along, but I don't know.
Can we talk about performances? Because I think what really did augment this movie was Shailene Woodley. She, in my mind, this is a potential Best Actress nomination. I think the movie itself may not ultimately be recognized in the way that a lot of films with Best Actress performances are, but boy, is she good. And I think that she gets the opportunity here to really show us how deep she can go, because most movies, you only have like one or two of those kind of heavy moments, where this movie presents them time after time after time. But she also delivers time after time after time. And there's a moment towards the end where, you know, the light goes on in the middle of the night and her parents walk into the bedroom, and there's no dialogue in that scene, mm-hmm. but wow, I was walloped, and I totally believed in what was going on there. This is as good as a performance I've seen all year in anything.
I mean, of course there's good acting in it. It's a film about kids dying of cancer. Of course there's good acting in it, okay? I mean, sorry, I have to be like the voice of reason in this podcast because I'm sitting with two soppy males. I mean, no, it's ridiculous.
No, Shirley, go on, finish.
But I think... So I think... Yes, of course, this is like the perfect role that every young actor is gonna, no pun intended, die to do. I just guess I couldn't get past the story being so predictable for the most part. And I found the main character just too smart-ass for my liking. And although that changed... No, the character of Hazel. Hazel.
Hazel Grace.
And although that changed a little bit, Joe, to your point about the manufactured arc... I still found it to be quite annoying, and I thought Ansel Elgort was very good. He was a good actor. But again, it was just too unbelievable. And then their interaction with their third friend who becomes blind. I mean, it just, people don't react that way. It was just too unbelievable.
So going back to Shailene Woodley, of course she's a fine actor. She's an amazing actor, and we've seen that again and again. And I think this is the equivalent of giving her a jackhammer, and she just goes around with the jackhammer, just like destroying every wall, like bang, bang, bang. And you know, she is literally giving
pepper
a jackhammer.
Spraying you as she goes.
But for me personally, I mean, she was so much, she was leagues better in something like The Spectacular Now last year, where her character was so unusual and it was so, you know, delicate, and her character was so atypical. Which this one, again, I don't want to blame her. She's a great actor, period. I mean, or even in The Descendants, you know, where she's playing this very bitter, hurt teenager. And she was very, I think her level of difficulty in those movies were much higher. Now, granted, she never got the recognition because those were far too subtle. And because she uses the movie uses the jackhammer approach here, she is going to get a lot more recognition for it. And I don't care, frankly, what she gets recognition for. She is a great actor, so I'd be happy with it.
Yeah, I disagree with you somewhat there. I mean, really? I think this was, it was manipulative, but it was...
But she's brilliant, but
It was such a good performance, and I believed her, and I agree with Rashmi that the character was a little bit too wise for her years, and too the setup kind of led me to think, well, being in a situation where you are approaching the end of your life at such a young age would create a certain mm-hmm. wisdom within you, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you're going to look at things from a different perspective to the average, you know, teenager. So that was enough for me to buy what was happening here. That was enough for me to buy the dialogue, and I didn't think it was overly cooked in that particular aspect. Personally, I think the performance was takeaway level of difficulty, but I still think she hit it out of the park, because there were moments in that movie where I was broken, and I think a lot of that was the way that she was reacting to the situations that were happening.
I mean, there are two other characters in the movie played by her parents, with Laura Dern and Sam Tremel from True Blood. And look at those two actors, particularly Laura Dern. I mean, she plays a mother who's trying to hold it together. At every point, she's being brave. And there's a brilliant scene that she keeps remembering from her childhood when Laura Dern says something to her daughter. And the movie treats those characters with so much restraint. And I wish, or at least those characters are played with so much restraint. And I wish the movie had assigned the same degree, or maybe even a little bit of that degree of restraint to the two main characters.
Agreed.
The Hazel and Gus character.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Laura Dern is so good here. And, you know, she doesn't have any big showy breakout moment, but you, at every point, you believe, even though you never see a breakdown, you believe that at every minute she's just holding it together. She wants to be brave for her daughter. And, you know, good actors do it. You don't need that big screaming in the middle of the night scene, you know. Just, she does it so beautifully.
There's a moment where she's lied to over breakfast.
And how she takes it in.
Face and reaction to that is priceless.
Pitch perfect.
I mean, that actually was very hard to do. And I was like, whoa, that's exactly how my mum would have reacted if I had lied to her in that way.
Oh, I don't know. I think it should have been a bit more severe, Joe. But anyway, two other things that bothered me. One, I found that Gus looked way too young for the character. I mean, he was supposed to be older than her and he looked like a boy who didn't even have facial hair. And then secondly is, I hate the title. I hated the title walking into the movie and I still don't understand the title.
I need to read the book. I don't. I mean, there is references to stars. I mean, the movie starts and begins with her looking out on the stars. And there's a part when they go to Amsterdam and they drink champagne and they say that the champagne tastes like the stars. So I don't know. I think there is the theme about stars, but I, yeah.
I think the word eggs was used way more.
The eggs in our stars.
the fault in our eggs.
Oh, I like that. The fault in our eggs.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's wrap it up. So, Joe, you go first.
This was really overly sentimental. That said, walking out of the theater, I was so deeply affected that I can't. And because it was just today, I have to acknowledge the fact that this movie really, really got to me. Like I say, it's not often that I shed real tears in a movie. I can feel sad, I can feel emotional, but this movie, you know, just tugged on that. You know, it was tuned to perfection. So. This morning, if you'd asked me like an exit poll, which is probably where these high reviews are coming from, I'd have said 9 out of 10, knocked it out of the park. But as I think about how manipulated I was by the story, it's going to drop that down a point or two. I'm going to be generous and say 8 out of 10, because I do think this is a good movie going experience if you can handle the contrivances.
Yes, Steve.
Well, I mean, ditto. I was almost going to say exactly the same thing. When I walked out of the movie and I gave my feedback, I said that, you know, this movie is very, very effective for what it wants to do. And it seems sincere and it seems authentic. But it's been now, you know, close to a week since I've seen it. And the more I think about it, the more I feel I've been manipulated. But regardless, I mean, I think there is a huge market for this. People want to be moved in the movies. I think this is why people went to the movies way back when. I just wish it didn't feel so manufactured. So I give it a generous 7 out of 10.
God, time for the real voice. The fault of this movie is that it treats the subject matter in a very precious and manipulative way that leaves you thinking this should be a made-for-TV movie versus one with a general release. And, 6 out of 10.
Wow, I'm really surprised by that. I thought you would be annoyed a little bit about the medical side of things not quite being...
Oh yeah, don't even get me started on that.
Wow, that's a surprise to me. I think that's harsh, but
it was just too broody and teenage.
Yeah, A.O. Scott in the New York Times said, you know, that people who watch this movie, you know, will feel a lot. They will, you know, it'll be an emotional investment. But the one thing they'll feel more than sad is envy for them. And there's something to be said for a movie which almost makes you feel envious for somebody who has cancer and dies.
Yeah,
you know, it almost burnishes them with some kind of.
No,
they come off seeming gilded and their romance is made so perfect, you know, and the tragedy adds a whole other level of burnish to that relationship. And so I think, yeah, there's something questionable about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think what the story does is it puts them in a light where they are enlightened.
Right.
Right. They are somehow enlightened by the fact that they have this. And I think because of the way it was delivered, I bought that. You know, I think I could understand that somebody who has a finite length of time to live doesn't have a lot of the worries that, you know, they have one huge worry, don't get me wrong, but they're unburdened by this future that they have to live for and plan for. And that, I think that's what it was trying to get over. But it was overly sweet. I mean, it was just...
And contrived. I mean, that whole... cigarette stuff and
okay, done today.
Okay.
Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers as well. Let us know what you think. This was a controversial movie in some ways. We will debate this long after the podcast.
I thought you would give it a lower score, but carry on.
I almost did.
So until our next episode, it's too many movies and too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.